So, I've just pressed record, so it feels like I have to start speaking. Otherwise, in case someone ever downloads this talk, there'll be a very long gap of silence at the beginning, which I've been told is sometimes quite annoying. And I was just sitting here and really feeling this the sense of the reluctance before the movement or before the action, of just wanting to stay in the silence that's so beautiful, the silence that we've created together over the days and has also been created by who knows who, countless others, known or unknown. And I find that for myself, I often get caught up in that moment before the action. And I need to remind myself that also whatever will be said today by this sound box here is also created by all of us sitting here. And by countless others in that kind of mysterious, beautiful way that we've kind of been touching on in moments over the days here. And so I've been reflecting about kind of what it means that we're sitting, lying, walking, eating, shitting, pissing, whatever it is we're doing, coughing, thinking, in a place that's actually calling itself the Institute for Compassionate Living. And, yeah, I've just been kind of feeling into that. The fact that there is such a place, the fact that we're in it, the fact that someone has said, compassionate living matters to me. Therefore, this is what I'm gonna put as the title, as the name of the place that I'm creating. And isn't that kind of amazing? And I've also been reflecting on what kind of that means for me, for us here. Any part of that kind of title. Like, what is compassion? What does it mean to live compassionately? And what does it mean to be in, to practice in, to spend time, to give our energy to an Institute for Compassionate Living, which is what we're all doing as we're here. Whether we want to or not, it's kind of what's unfolding, what's happening, just by being here. And sometimes reflection has this kind of feeling for me as if I'm just kind of sending out questions into the space, and often just something resonates back. A lot like sitting, and we've got many examples here, in front of a very, very vast space, and just that sense that in that space, I can just let my heart speak, I can just ask the questions that interest or matter to me. And somehow there's a response, there's something that comes back. Like an echo, but it's not an echo. It's just not just a repetition of what I'm asking. And so the feeling that I get here when I feel into these questionings within is a feeling of openness. So that an institute of compassionate living is about an exploration that we're doing together. It's not, oh, we figured it out, here it is, this is the guidebook, these are the rules, follow. It's about, let's explore, let's find out what it means to us as individuals and as a community. And interestingly enough, this is also the attitude that the Buddha very much had towards his teachings, which felt meaningful to say today. That he said many, many times, don't just adopt what I say because I'm saying it. Don't just take it on because I look like a wise person and I'm called the awakened one or whatever it is. But actually experience for yourself, experiment for yourself. Find your own understanding. So that your understanding is whole, is complete. It has to go through each of us. So we can have a sense or a kind of immediate response sometimes. We hear something and we say, okay, yes, that makes sense. And then taking that further in, kind of in the same way that we breathe or digest our food. Taking that in, exploring that for myself so that I can really embody it, so that it becomes part of who I am, part of my cells. In some of the teachings, they actually speak about that, about how we are transformed through practice on the level of the cells of our body, how they change, how the pathways in the mind, in the brain, change. And like Mark was saying yesterday, they've been saying this for, you know, several thousand years. And now, with modern science, we know that these things actually happen. I keep going off on tangents, so it looks like it's just going to be that kind of talk. So I guess I have to say, just kind of stay with me. It's going to be a good practice. So what does it mean for us to really explore and experience the teachings? How does that actually show itself in our own practice, in our own life? And yesterday in one of the group interviews, someone gave a very beautiful image of that from her own experience. So I hope she doesn't mind that I'm going to use that. And she said, it's like I'm seeing that I've always used a certain map for my life. And now I'm starting to question, where did this map come from? Where is it leading to? Is that where I want to be going? And that's a very beautiful image for the process here. And so the first step is really to see, how am I living my life? According to what values, what is feeding the momentum, the movement? Where is it leading me? And is that what I want? And all of these are just open questions. I have a tendency sometimes to say things that sound quite so I really want to bring in the kind of gentle, soft approach to that. All of these are open questions. And so just allowing ourselves to ask these questions about my life and the map that I'm following. And taking time to just be with them, be with myself, have patience, rest. So that somehow I can give birth to my own map. The map that kind of fits this mixture of different conditions and needs. A map that is in tune with what I value. To what is in tune with what is precious for me. And again, when I was reflecting on this, it came to me how, in my experience, it's often I don't get much of a map, like not for a very long distance. It's more like these flashing arrows, you know, neon signs that say, you know, this way, or this way, or that way, or that way, whatever, or this way a lot of the time. And sometimes they're not even that bright. They can be quite subtle. So also part of my process is to become more sensitive, to hear, to see when these arrows come. And often they don't make sense on a logical level, but they resonate with something inside. And another image that I sometimes have, which I found really helpful, is of an inner compass. So something in me which is showing me the way. But I also kind of need to check that once in a while to see where it's pointing to. Or another way of saying it is like, what is my north? If a compass is pointing north, where is this pointing to? And this inner compass, again, is something we slowly develop the ability to listen to, or quickly in some cases, and can reconnect with, can find the way to listen to when we need. And this question of what is my compass pointing at, or where is my north, what is my north? Where is it that I'm heading, or what is it that I want to align my life with? Has come up over the days in so many different ways, in things some of us have said up here, in questions that have been asked in interviews, internally. At least for me. And it's a very deep investigation, a very kind of crucial question to ask ourselves. What would it be to live a meaningful life for me? It doesn't have to be the same for me and for you. But what does that mean? And again, what is it that I want my life to be made of? What do I want to be aligned with? What touches me? What is precious to me? How do I live authentically? How do I live authentically? So that's the question to hold. And we don't actually need to know or to find the answer right now. We don't even need to know or to find the answer by the end of the retreat. Or if you're staying on, by the end of the next one. We just need to ask and to hold that question with gentleness and lightness. Because in the questioning itself, there's power. The questioning itself is creating something. It says here in my notebook that the question itself opens us beyond the mini-me, which is what I was thinking yesterday during Mark's talk. I was remembering the mini-me in the Austin Power film. If anyone remembers, there's the bad guy, and the bad guy's got a little guy who is an exact copy of him, and he's called the mini-me. And so I'm not trying to say the mini-me is bad, but it's just a mini version. And it's often what we identify with, or how we live, or what we live through. So just asking these questions kind of opens us to life beyond the mini-me. And just in the questioning, there's a going beyond the known. We're kind of putting ourselves on a threshold or on an edge where there's a lot of space around, a lot of space where things can happen, where things can change. And so as Mark was saying yesterday, in this turning our attention in this investigation of what is me, where do I end, what is the mini-me, and what is the unlimited me. In that investigation itself, something shifts. Something shifts so that we can begin to see glimpses of who we are, as well as of what we're not. In a way, again, it's like being in a place like this, where we suddenly, by looking in, we actually look out, and we have this huge expanse to live in, instead of just a small space. And another thing we begin to see is that even what we know about the mini-me is just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much that we're not in contact with, that we don't see, that we don't know. And all of that is impacting what we do and how we do it. So we start seeing the conditioned nature of ourselves and of everything. That nothing exists on its own, clear cut and separate. But that everything is made up of countless conditions, countless events, countless people, just like this talk right now. Yeah? Things other people have said in groups, things Mark and Nathan have said in their talks, things I've heard or read or been told, and I maybe don't even consciously remember. All of that coming together to create an event or a person. And we can see that in anything, actually. It's often, the word that's often used for that is interconnectedness. The way everything is woven into everything else. And the Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh speaks very beautifully about it, saying, whatever object I take, I can see the whole world in it. So if I take this, depends on your view, beautiful or garish. Garish? How do you pronounce it? Garish. Kurta. I can see the whole world in it. I can see the hands of the women that did the embroidery. I can see the people who wove the cloth. I can see the people that grew the cotton. I can see the sun and the rain that helped the cotton grow. I can see the parents of the people that grew the cotton and gave birth to them. The truck drivers who took the cotton from one place to the other, etc., etc., etc. It's just endless. I could probably spend days and weeks just speaking about what's just in this. So we can see it very clearly if we look in that way at anything, including ourselves. And sometimes it comes in unexpected ways, quite funny ways. After one of my personal interviews today, I realized something about myself. And I can't exactly remember how, but I've been noticing over the days that I've been sitting in quite uncomfortable places, both for my personal interviews and for my group interviews. And Jonathan, in his kind and caring way, from the first day, said to me, do you want me to change the sign to say you're going to be sitting somewhere else? And I just kept saying, oh, no, it's okay, I don't mind. You know, it's okay, I don't mind. It's okay, I don't mind. And today just hit me, okay, maybe you don't mind. About what about the poor people that have to come and see you? And so that was really, just seeing that, how that, you know, partly genuine, I don't mind, partly, yeah, I can handle it, has blinded me to the effect on someone else. But my choices affect others very clearly. So can I see that? And can I also learn from this that my comfort also matters? I'm not a separate part of this whole web. So for many of us, there's so much conditioning that says, if you're a good person, you let go of your own needs. Or if you're a spiritual person, you don't mind sitting in an uncomfortable place. Or whatever it is. But actually, we are part of this web. So our needs also matter. My needs also matter. Because if they don't, then not only am I going to suffer, but someone else is probably as well. And not just because of that, also not kind of falling into that, but also because I also deserve to be comfortable and to be happy. That also matters. So with the looking in and looking at this realization of the way we're constantly conditioning and being conditioned by each other in what is a beautiful dance of life. And in this seeing, opening, investigating, what was coming to me today was how important it is to have a steady base. That this seeing can happen, this deepening can happen through having a steady base. Through being steady, being quiet, being calm. Cultivating patience. And being less reactive. And that is really what we're doing here. By being silent, by practicing through the day, we're cultivating that type of presence or that type of atmosphere internally, which naturally means also externally. The ability to rest with and into experience as it is, as it comes. Staying steady so that we don't rock the boat we're sitting in too much. So the water can stay clear. And then seeing can happen. And the more these qualities of steadiness, of calm, are with us, the more we relax into life, the wider we become. And we can really see that in the body. When we relax, we naturally open, and there's naturally more space. I mean, you can try it yourself. You can really feel it. If I go from this to this, there's naturally more space. Or when we have a good laugh, one of those really great rolling laughs. Also, we can feel that there's more space there. So we're wider. We're less constricted. And with that also comes a softening. A softening, an opening, a widening, kind of all attributes of the same process. And often when we think of the word soft, we think of it as opposite to hard and also opposite to strong. But with the softening and the opening, we actually access a different kind of power. Nathan mentioned this in the opening talk, I think, but they say that when the Buddha was sitting under the tree, right at the end of his journey, his inner journey, he was sitting there in meditation with deep, deep commitment to practice until he was free. And they say that Mara, who symbolizes all the conditioning that is keeping us constricted, that is keeping us small. Kept trying to tempt the Buddha out of this commitment to meditate until he was free. And so Mara did it in different ways. He tried to tempt the Buddha by offering delicious food, beautiful dancing women, probably naked. And every time a temptation arose, the Buddha just said, "I see you, Mara." So that's the kind of soft power we're talking about. He didn't need to argue or to explain or to fight back. He just needed to say, "I see you, Mara. I see what's behind these temptations. And by seeing, they don't tempt me anymore." And then Mara tried fear, and he sent demons and scariest beings we can imagine with weapons and big teeth and whatever. And again, the Buddha just said, "I see you, Mara." And every time he said that, the story goes, these beings would just disappear. So just that soft power in the seeing, of seeing what is as it is. And after trying this for some time, Mara sent the most challenging challenge. And he said to the Buddha, "What right do you think you have to do this, to be free? What right?" So we know this doubt. We all know doubt. And this time the Buddha put his hand on the earth and he said, "The earth is my witness that I have a right." And for me, that hand on the earth is what I call this widening the base. Connecting to what is beyond the mini-me and resting in what we really are. So maybe as just the mini Zohar, I would freak out. I do freak out when doubt comes. What right have I to sit here and talk to you as if I have answers to the questions we're all asking? But if I relax into the wider base and remember that this isn't about me, this isn't about me, this is about us, then the doubt can go. So when I think of the Buddha under that tree, the feeling that I get is of great steadiness, of great balance, of someone that is not shaken by the things that shake me, or is shaken but not to the degree that he's lost. And I can feel that that is where we're all heading. As we practice, as our steadiness grows, we're heading to a place of balance, where there's less dramas, and more juice, more fuel for our path. And as this happens, we can include more in our hearts. We can accept more of life and of ourselves. We can, this is one of Nathan's phrases, expand our circle of friends to include in friendship more of the other, more of life. And our strength is the wide base power, like the strength in martial arts. That was another image that was coming. How in a lot of ancient martial arts tradition, they don't use the strength that is just in me, but through a wide base, using the power of whatever comes to move, to defend what needs to be defended, to nourish what needs to be nourished. Using what comes to increase my possibilities of action. So I'm not relying just on these poor unexercised muscles, but on something more. Nathan was reminding me yesterday of something a friend of ours said. And he's a rabbi, and he works for a human rights organization in Israel. And his particular area of responsibility is to work with Palestinian farmers. And we've known him now for quite a few years, and every year he tells us how much worse the situation is growing, how many more restrictions there are, and how he experiences that with the people, how their lives are getting more and more restricted, how their land is taken away, how there's more oppression and regulations from the Israeli government and the army. And in one of these conversations, which happened during a Being Peace retreat we were running, someone in the group asked this friend of ours, his name is Yechiel, they asked him, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the situation? And he said, well, this isn't just about this situation, it's about life in general. And he said, I see myself as a short-term pessimist and a long-term optimist. So when I look at the facts on the ground, things look bad. And I feel that anguish, that pain of that. I'm not pushing that away. But when I look at the big picture, at the long term, I believe in humans. I believe in our capacity to transform suffering. And his belief is rooted in his faith and in his practice. I remember when I asked him once, what keeps you going? And he said, prayer. That's not different than what we're doing here. This going in so that we can reach out and grow out and expand out and have a wider base of possibilities, which then gives us the strength to work with what comes in life, internally and externally, and empowers us to keep working for transformation, for the end of suffering, wherever we meet it. And we're not alone. There's others doing the same thing in different ways, in different places. And others have been doing that in the past and will be doing it in the future. And as we practice, we also get nourished. So it's like a cycle. The more steadiness we have, the wider our base is. The more steady we can be, and our base continues to widen. And from this wide, expansive being, friendship, compassion, care naturally arise. Naturally arise. In the Buddhist teachings, and actually also in many Indian texts, some of these qualities are called Brahma Viharas, divine abidings. And they're qualities that abide, that live in a heart that's open. And equally, they're qualities that open our heart when we cultivate them. And they're qualities like compassion, like friendliness, like appreciative joy, and the ground for all of them, equanimity, steadiness, wide base, not being rocked by life. So we have an opportunity to connect to who we truly are, to change our perception of what that is. Not by suppressing our mini-me, but by connecting so that it naturally expands to include everything. And when we do that, change happens in ourselves. And the path in our brain are rewired. And when we do that, we also rewire the world around. It doesn't just end here. I'd just like to end with a short story from my recent experience. So some months ago, I was in Israel working to try and make an appointment in a hospital for a Palestinian 9-year-old girl with very acute cancer. And her parents had asked me for help, and I didn't know much more than any of us would about the procedure. So I spent a morning making phone calls. I didn't even know which department in the hospital she needed to go to. And I was just making phone calls and phoning one department and then being sent to another and then to another and then to another. And I spent, I think, about 2 hours on this phone, on the phone, making these phone calls. And in that experience, which could be frustrating, was certainly painful, holding the pain of the child and her family and of the situation that they find themselves in, and my own limited ability to help, and just staying steady with phone call after phone call after phone call. And when, after a couple of hours, I'd reached the dead end for that day. It wasn't a dead end completely, but it was for that day. Nathan and I talked. And what stood out from that experience was that not one person that I spoke to turned me away. So not one person said, "Can't help you, I'm busy, bye," put the phone down. Each person, whether it was a nurse or a doctor or a secretary or a receptionist, sometimes I didn't even know who I was talking to, whoever they were, they always gave me the next step, even if it was just to go around in circles. No one said, "I don't care," or "I can't help," or whatever. I mean, they said, "I can't help, but try this." And that was the experience. And it felt like in that web of phone calls and of being referred from one part of the hospital to the other, which got crazier and trickier as time went on, we were rewiring the world, because every person was connecting to their care and their good intention. And so that changed something for each of us. And I had, by the end of that session, the promise that the next day the solution would come, which it did. So staying steady, not giving up, staying open to the goodness in all of us can make a difference in the mini, in the micro, and it can make a difference in the big picture, in the macro. And often we don't know what that impact, what that difference is. But we can tell where we are or how we are in that. We can check and realign our inner compass. As many times as we need. It doesn't break. It's not made in India. So as many times as we need. Realigning, connecting, steadying, widening. For the benefit of everything and everyone. So let's just have some quiet time to end. May our practice together nourish and sustain awakening, compassion and wisdom in all beings everywhere, including ourselves. Thank you.